The man held his camera steady but stopped filming. He turned and looked down at me with a contemptuous stare of utter disdain and disgust. He didn't demean himself to speak to me as I cringed in the ditch, but turned back to his camera eyepiece and continued filming. At that moment came a flash, accompanied by a loud explosion and terrific concussion as the Amtrak blew up. The concussion knocked the cameraman completely off his feet. He was uninjured, but badly shaken and terribly frightened. He peered, wide-eyed and cautious, over the ditch bank at the twisted Amtrak burning on the road. I leaned over to him and said pleasantly, "I told you so." He turned his no longer arrogant face toward me. I grinned at him with the broadest smile I could conjure, like a mule eating briars through a barbed wire fence, as the Texans would say. Speechless, the cameraman turned quickly and crawled off along the ditch toward the rear. Four or five Marine tanks were parked close together in the valley downhill from us, about 100 yards away. Their heavily armored fronts faced up the valley to our left. The crewmen had been alerted by the first enemy round fired at the Amtrak. We saw them swinging their 75s toward our left and closing their turret hatches. Not a moment too soon. The entire Japanese 47-millimeter gun battery opened rapid fire on the tanks. Too bad the movie cameraman had felt the call of duty summon him to the rear after the Amtrak exploded, because he missed a dramatic scene. The enemy guns fired with admirable accuracy. Several of their tracer-like armor-piercing shells hit the turrets of the tanks and ricocheted into the air. The tanks returned fire. In a few minutes, the Japanese guns were knocked out or ceased firing, and everything got quiet. The tanks sustained only minor damage. We went back onto the road and moved on south without further incident. Until the island was secured on 21 June, we made a series of rapid moves southward, stopping only to fight groups of die-hard Japanese in caves, pillboxes, and ruined villages. The fresh 8th Marines pushed south rapidly. "The 8th Marines going like a bat out of hell," a man said as news drifted back to us. We were fortunate in not suffering many casualties in the company. The Japanese were beaten, and the hope uppermost in every weary veteran's mind was that his luck would hold out a little longer until the end of the battle. We used loudspeakers, captured Japanese soldiers and Okinawan civilians, to persuade the remaining enemy to surrender. One sergeant and a Japanese lieutenant who had graduated from an Ivy League college and spoke perfect English, gave themselves up in a road cut. Just after they came out and surrendered, a sniper opened fire on us. We 8 or 10 Marines took cover next to the embankment, but the Japanese officer, an NCO, stood in the middle of the road with the bullets kicking up dirt all around them. The sniper obviously was trying to kill them because they had surrendered. We looked at the two Japanese standing calmly, and one of our NCOs said, "Get over here under cover, you dumb bastards." The enemy officer grinned affably and spoke to his NCO. They walked calmly over and got down as ordered.